This is liquid gold. Why don't you go for it, Mike?
Where the ice is crushed and the souls are sold. Welcome to Liquid Gold. Yeah, the first AM episode taping that we have. You'll notice our voices have dropped a few notes because we were hanging out last night doing show prep. And we did Parapalooza from my back porch.
It was a good hang, man.
It was great. And we want to welcome you. Thanks for joining us and listening. Here on Liquid Gold, we're a podcast from Nashville, Tennessee about all things beverage. We'll go over some coffee. We go over a lot of liquor, a lot of cocktails, beer, wine. We talk booze news with Kenneth Dedman, my co-host here. My name's Mike Wolf from Chopper. Tiki Bar opening here later this spring, and we're getting excited about that, so we'll keep updating you on that. You can find us on Instagram at liquidgold_pod. We post pictures of beverages, some recipe stuff. We kind of keep you updated on what we're doing. We invite you to subscribe and share it with a friend.
And drop us a line sometime.
Drop us a line.
Ask a question.
Yeah, we love that.
Pay me a compliment.
And we want to thank We Own This Town for having us. WeOwnThisTown.net, all the podcasts and music and stuff that they're producing. Super cool. Thank you to Michael Eads, our producer.
Thanks, Michael.
So what we were doing, we were smoking cigars. We had had through various friends, shout out Troy, some friends who had been in Cuba. Cuba had been on my mind a lot lately. It's been you know, kind of 10 years since I was out there and traveled all over the island and got to interview all kinds of people. It's a special place with very special cigars and rum, like everybody knows, but as well as music, people, food, culture, architecture. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I'd love to check it out. I've had a lot of friends that have visited. I myself, never. But Godfather 2 is my favorite Godfather.
Yeah, also one of the greatest movies ever. You had brought over a very special whiskey. You had a trip to the Willett Distillery on Monday, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. And it was cigars and whiskey, which is a beautiful pairing. We'll get into a little bit of the specifics later. Some things we're not going to talk about today on Liquid Gold: sugar-free cocktails. Because it's just a long topic, and I've had a few people ask me about that recently and talk about that, and it's just, it can be tough.
Especially if they're sweet cocktails. Yeah. Sweet, sugar-free, light cocktails.
Yeah, that's where you put Splenda or something, and we don't recommend that. Yeah, it's that stuff's okay. That's why.
Processed honey.
Sure.
Calorie-free honey. You ever heard of that?
I think it's called water. Also, who killed JFK?
You promised to tell me who did it last night, and you never did. But I had a great theory.
That's why we probably shouldn't talk about it. Shit. We could get in trouble, since we know. But we probably shouldn't say.
Secret's safe with Mike.
It has a lot to do with Cuba. But we probably shouldn't get into it, because it's a beverage podcast. But if you want to hang out with us and smoke cigars and drink whiskey and talk about it, invite us over.
Smoke Cuban cigars and drink fine bourbon is more like it.
Yeah.
That was the experience last night, Mike.
It was beautiful.
Let's not detract from it.
Oh, we'll get into the experience. Some other things we're not going to talk about: Blarney Stones or the Blarney Stone.
Blarney Stone. What are you supposed to kiss it or piss on it?
Kiss it, I think.
But are you sure?
Yeah.
Hmm.
You go up some steps. I looked online at like some reviews of checking out the Blarney Stone, and some people were like, I was surprised at how many steps I had to take to get up there.
I don't know, dude. Kiss and piss are just two words that are too similar to each other, so I'm not putting my lips on that.
Okay. Probably shouldn't talk about it. The other thing that we're not going to get into a whole lot is a John Muir predicting the whiskey boom as he traveled through
the late
Kentucky.
Great John Muir.
Yeah. Amazing human being. I am going to read a quote that he had. We should have seen it coming, of how special Kentucky and the oak. He said, I have, and I quote, I have seen oaks of many species in many kinds of exposure and soil, but those of Kentucky excel in grandeur all I had ever before beheld. They are broad and dense and bright green. In the leafy bowers and caves of their long branches dwell magnificent avenues of shade, and every tree seems to be blessed with a double portion of a strong, exulting life. That was a notebook entry that he wrote on September 2nd, 1867, on his 1,000-mile walk to the Gulf. So He definitely saw. It's a beautiful sentiment. He definitely saw something in those rolling hills and the beautiful oak trees. That's what I want to kind of get into with our. We'll start today with Parapalooza, where we talk about pairing beverages with things in life and things you're going to eat, but also cigars. Because when you're smoking cigars, you're probably going to be drinking something with it. And I think there's a bunch of different things that you can use. Now, we were lucky that we happened to have some, you know, really nice Cuban cigars, and you had happened to go to probably the two best whiskey. Now, we don't necessarily want to pontificate or anything, but these are two of the most special distilleries in the world for making whiskey. You went to Willett, you went to Buffalo Trace.
Yes.
And so I think pairing a cigar with whiskey, very, very typical and awesome. I don't think you can go wrong there, as long as you've got, you know, something bold, old, and liquid gold. Seriously, though, I think you do need something kind of older and higher proof, but also maybe throw a little water in it so you've got a little bit more just liquid volume in your glass, because you're going to be sitting there for a while. But let's talk about the bottle that we had that you brought back so graciously from Willett, which is one of the only places to get these special family estate bottled single barrel bourbons that they produce, which is some of the finest whiskey in the world. This was a 15-year bourbon, hand bottled from barrel number 1216. It was 118.4 proof. And we've tasted a fair amount of these things over the years at Husk, working at Husk, doing our thing, picking barrels, all this other stuff. And they're, what's great about these family estate bottles, they're all different. And you get a different...
single expressions.
Totally. And you get a different array of flavors. This one last night's one of the better ones I've tasted. So
it was,
thank you for sharing.
It was... To me, and not because it was in my possession, but to me, it was the best 15 or older year bourbon that I've had from Willett. And like you mentioned, we've had a lot of them.
Yeah.
A whole lot.
The famous 23-year Weeded from Ed Foote.
Yeah.
That he distilled. That was kind of like, we all used to say,
this is a different one.
It was a unicorn bottle. And this was just, it's an example how you can go up there and you can pick out a bottle, and it just might be transcendent. It might be this good. And so we're not trying to bullshit here. We had a really special experience. We had really amazing cigars. We had 15-year Willett that is always going to be good. It might be special, it might be amazing. This was truly transcendent. It had some light spice to it. It had that sort of we had some kind of vanilla sarsaparilla stuff going on, but it was very pure mint.
You remember I kept saying mint.
The mint.
Like, it was really weird. Like, it was a late aftertaste too.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talked about, we wanted to make charity juleps with it. $30 julep. Yeah. If you're making a julep with that, probably even more.
$40 julep.
$800 julep.
I'm gonna auction this julep.
We put diamonds on it.
Yeah.
Mix diamonds into the crushed ice.
You get Manuel to bedazzle it.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's good. That's a good project that we probably should get on right away. But so the whiskey was great with the cigars. Great experience. I think also some things I have enjoyed with cigars in the past. Rum's a big one. A nice Jamaican rum. A nice Caribbean rum.
Probably the most classic
Cuban
pairing to a good cigar would probably be like a really, really nice... thick, and by thick I mean like viscosity wise aged rum,
and cognac. That's a big one. People like cognac and brandy with cigars. That's sort of more old school.
Sure.
And then I think the one thing that people don't think about a lot is wines. Depending on how much you like tannin and things that sort of grip your tongue, you can go a few different directions. You could go for with a bigger, juicier Cab Franc.
Sure.
And you could go with something lighter. If you're just going to sit there, you kind of want to pass the time while you smoke the cigar, you could get a lighter red, I think even a Gamay.
I disagree on a Gamay with the specific cigars that we had. Like,
we had some bold.
This would have been a rare occasion where Kenneth would have been calling for that Napa cab. Like, big, boozy, lots of acid, lots of tannin, just explosion.
Yeah, so you're kind of offsetting.
Those cigars were powerful, man.
They were. And a lot of times with the Cubans, if you get like Monte Cristos, they can be lighter. They're sort of like a, you know, like suede. They're more suede than leather.
Well, I say cigars too, because you had two very different kinds. We were kind of passing back and forth.
Right. Like, we had a Cohiba that was very special. And then I had this other one that had been passed along to me from Melissa. Shout out Melissa over at Lyra, who had been to Cuba recently and traveled all over the Pinar del Rio area, saw some small tobacco farms, and got this hand-rolled, super fresh, very singular and interesting, amazing cigar that is, I've never tasted anything like that before. That was great.
Yeah, we had almost too much flavor last night.
We did. It was a flavor explosion. So yeah. You kind of have to be careful what you do afterwards. We decided to run through the streets.
Streaking. Dude, I went to Dino's before I came over. Did I tell you about that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I had a burger, really rare. I don't eat a lot of beef, man.
Yeah, we love the hot chicken.
Yeah, yeah. It was amazing. Like, my body is still in a wee bit of shock from all the flavors that I experienced last night.
It was big. So we're drinking coffee now, and that's another thing. On the flip side, the next day, after you've had a cigar, so you had a cigar in the evening or at night, and one cool thing about pairing, the flavor is still going to be there from the cigar the next day. And coffee, like a nice creamy coffee, like a macchiato, cortado, a coffee drink, it's going to go really well with the flavors that are still in your mouth.
Yeah, I'm still wearing that cigar. When I was getting ready this morning, I grabbed my toothbrush and smelled it. It smelled like a cigar.
It hangs around with you for a while.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
Well, we're excited today to share with you part two of our episode of our interview with Kevin King, bar manager of Husk Savannah, recent winner of the regional portion of the bartender competition at Heaven Hill that was held over here at Bastion. So shout out to Kevin. He's moving on to the finals.
Which he won. And at the time of the interview, we didn't know. We grabbed him straight out of the building.
Good
and brought
point,
him over
yeah.
here.
Yeah, we grabbed him straight from the competition, and it was later that night at a dinner, which we'll post some pictures from that dinner. It was super cool. They announced him as the winner, and yeah, what a great day. What a great day for us. We had a few Negronis. We did our episode, and, you know, the next day, sent Kevin on back to Savannah. We miss him, but we've got loads more on the interview today, and it's definitely worth mentioning at this point. So over the weekend, a lot of people talking about it, especially people in our orbit who have worked at Husk and been around Sean Brock.
Homer.
The Netflix Chef's Table episode debuted Friday. I finally just saw it. And in the context of that show, there's chefs from all over the world. You'll have an episode that is very unique where you'll have a chef who's working with seafood, you know, on an island with nobody around, or you'll have someone out in the middle of the jungle working on, you know, 100 different varieties of potatoes. And so it's very interesting. It goes all over the world. So to have somebody from our backyard and somebody that we worked with and worked side by side with for a long time, It was really cool to see. And it's a very well done episode. There's a lot of inspiring things about it. They visit Blackberry Farms, talk to John Koikendahl, the seed master over there, the master gardener over there. That's super cool.
That guy has a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah.
A wealth.
He does.
He's like Daddy Warbucks of seeds.
Yeah, right? But I thought it was really well done, and we're all happy for Chef Brock and kind of the path that he's on now. About to have a kid, so congrats
any
to
minute now.
He and Adi for that. That's super exciting.
Congrats, Adi.
Doesn't even know what he's in for. But it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a fun journey. I did want to share, because I told my wife this story. I don't know if I had told it before after we watched the episode. We've all got, you know, stories working with Chef Brock and stories being out. We've done events in different cities. And I think one cool story I can share that I guess I hadn't really told in a while, but this is from the first day that we were opening at Husk in Nashville. Very highly anticipated restaurant. It was a crazy time that we're barely, you know, I think they were like hammering together the tables, you know, an hour before people were going to sit in them.
That's typical restaurant opening.
Sure. I remember all the booze getting there, you know, 8 hours before we were supposed to open. And I remember we put away the, like, the last bottle. We looked back at the shelves and we said, all right, I think that's everything. And then, like, the first guest walked in right there. And we were just like, oh my Lord. One story that I can share that I think was really cool and says a lot about who he is and where he's coming from. And it's just a little anecdote. So it was an hour and a half before the first night, before the first service. We're about to open.
Before the opening of Hus Nashville.
And there's people all over the kitchen. It's crazy. There's a lot of energy, but there's a lot of anxiety. And we had run out of this strawberry shrub thing that we were making for one of the cocktails that was on the menu, because we had preview nights, we had done some events, and here we were, we just didn't really have enough. We didn't think to get through the whole night. And he sees me walking through the hallway going back to the walk-in, and he's like, are you guys in good shape? And I was like, yeah, we need to make you know, a little bit of shrub kind of on the fly and figure out how we can have enough to get through, but we're fine. And so he's like, oh yeah, let me show you something. This is right before we're about to open. And he took some time to, you know, help us set up this like double boiler situation where we're extracting the liquid out of the strawberries through this tube where the vinegar and heat is pulling the liquid out of the strawberries and funneling it into another vessel. And then you can like, you whisk in some sugar and you have, as long as the strawberries are really good, you have this really pure strawberry shrub that you can use, and you also get some of the flavor from the tops, which I'm a big fan of. You get that kind of herbaceousness. But it was an amazing thing to watch this guy who I didn't even want to say anything to and be like, oh no, we're in trouble. It just was like, it happened, and he dropped everything and just helped us for a second. I definitely saw moments where you would think he would be freaking out about this or that or stressed or this. And sure, that everybody has moments like that, but I think one takeaway that I always had with him, he could always take time away to teach you something, to show you something, and to change your perspective on something, you know? So it was a really cool, it was a cool moment, and it really showed me like, man, this guy is special.
Certainly.
Working for this dude is special. And I'll never forget that.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. I suppose aside from the glitz and glamour, which I don't really see that guy glitzy or glamorous, like it is kind of weird working with that guy and then seeing like people staring at him like what are you staring at? That's my boss, you know?
Like Morgan used to say to mate, when we go to food festivals, mate, it's like walking around with one of the Beatles.
Yeah. Princess Diana.
It's like walking around Princess Diana, mate. The seas are parting, mate.
Wow.
Oh, man. I don't think we can do Morgan too well. We got to work on it. Must be nice.
New Zealand accent's hard to nail down. What they made was really great television, and I think tried to nail the core of Chef Sean Brock. And, you know, like they cut around all those, like those edges of him. There's so much more to the guy than what's in the episode. Probably one of my fondest memories of the guy, as if he's gone, like he's still here.
He's coming on. He's coming on the show at some point.
It includes you and Kevin King, our guest on this episode. The great, Elijah Craig barrel pick that we, Hus Nashville split with Big Star in Chicago, Paul Kahan's restaurant group.
That was a fun time.
Yeah, there's really too much to say about that day, but probably one of the most ironic, therefore very funny to me, moments was after we had picked the barrel ourselves, you, me, Kevin, our old sommelier, Andy Wedge, chef, and the entire crew from Big Star. We're standing out in the parking lot at Heaven Hill, and Chef pulls out a bottle of 1982 Old Granddad and starts passing it around. And I was like, oh gosh, this is probably one of the best moments and the most ironic, therefore, entertaining to me moments where we had just picked a barrel from this one distillery, and we're in the parking lot drinking one of their competitors. That blew me away. And also we were passing around, what was it?
Granddad.
The molasses. No, not molasses.
The barrel-aged maple syrup.
The maple syrup.
From the Van Winkle.
Yep. The Van Winkle maple syrup. I think I hit that harder than I did the whiskey bottle.
And that was one of those days, too, where you realize, and you were just up there, so you can speak to this, up there being Bardstown, where Willett is, where Heaven Hill is. There's something special when you're walking around out there and you're smelling the air, and there's the smell of whiskey barrels in the air. You can smell that Kentucky air.
Yeah,
when you smell whiskey.
The wind whipping around, kind of like.
And you smell the whiskey when you're up there. And so there's this harmonious thing. And that's sort of the only secret that really I know of, is that there is no secret. And it's just, you're not going to replicate that making it somewhere else. And that's what's really interesting about Kentucky whiskey bourbon. It's of a place.
Yeah, I mean, making fine whiskey, of course, takes a lot of patience, and I don't know any other way to explain it, but the way that the air whips around the hollers up there kind of just like smells of patience,
mm-hmm.
and easygoing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
It takes a long time.
Yeah.
For it to come, as we saw, drinking some of the 15 year, it took a long time for that to happen, and we're thankful that it did.
Yeah. Yeah. Holy moly, man.
So one thing we get into with Kevin, part two, we talk about the Boulevardier, and you give a crazy, bold Boulevardier recipe, which I appreciate.
Sorry about
that. Hey, I love it. You give 2 ounces of a super strong barrel-proof whiskey, and then we're talking ounce Campari. We talk about blending the vermouths, and I would just say to the listener at home, that's probably...
Don't listen to Kenneth.
No, I'm just saying it. I don't mean to disagree, but yes, I would say if you're making them at home, if you have a just sort of everyday $25, $30 bottle, say an Old Granddad 114, say a Rittenhouse 100 proof, I think 100 proof is a good proof to make a Boulevardier, and I think you're in the more ounce to ounce and a half range for the Boulevardier. Being a take on the Negroni, where you've got equal parts, 1 ounce, 1 ounce gin, 1 ounce sweet vermouth, 1 ounce Campari. For the Boulevardier, most usually up the whiskey just a tad, so an ounce to an ounce and a quarter to an ounce and a half of rye whiskey to an ounce Campari to an ounce sweet vermouth. Your recipe, and I'm not saying it's wrong, but it's you're talking really good high-end whiskey, and
always,
I appreciate
baby.
That. You're talking about a $16, $18 Boulevardier with really special,
like
7-year, more than that. You make
them for kings,
yeah,
queens, princes, and princesses.
So that's, yeah. And I think it's just worth mentioning that this is all subjective. And a lot of times it's subjective to whichever spirits you're using, whether you're using everyday stuff or you're using something super special. That can affect how much of that original spirit, that base spirit of a cocktail that you're going to use.
True that.
Yeah. So we're going to throw it here to part two with Kevin King from Husk Savannah, where we get into gambling, Boulevardiers, and Husk.
I remember the first cocktail Kenneth made for me, actually.
Mm.
I was sitting at... He started about maybe 3 weeks before me.
2 months before you.
Well, it seemed like 3 weeks. So, and he was working at Merchants as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he came over and I kind of introduced myself. And I think I ordered a Boulevardier. I'm almost positive. And then he left because I was sitting on the other side of the bar and he went back to the service well.
Yeah.
I didn't see him for another 12 minutes, 15 minutes maybe. And then he came back.
Greatness takes time.
And then he came back.
I was working. I was in the service well, you jerk.
And then he came back.
I was
back.
Making drinks for the whole restaurant.
He comes back. He takes off his hat. He wipes his forehead. And he goes, oh, my God. I'm sorry. That took forever. Boom. Drops a drink. He goes back to the service well.
You're welcome.
And it was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
Hey, this guy makes a nice Boulevardier.
He makes great cocktails.
Yeah.
Actually.
That'd
be a good one to start with. What would your recipe be for Boulevardier? For those folks at home stirring up cocktails.
Definitely a rye whiskey, Mike. Mm. Preferably something non-chill filtered, barrel proof. Maybe if you can find one of those like 7 year will it rise?
Oh, yeah.
Right, Kevin?
Yeah.
Like that 7 year will it rise? Like, delicious. I haven't seen it in years, really.
Delicious,
like,
yeah.
But that would be my ultimate rye whiskey for the Boulevardier.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. The rye kind of sticks out, gives that kind of peppery thing, bouncing that off the herbaceous sort of qualities of the Campari and the vermouth.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I love a rye in a Boulevardier. So we got that. So what? How much rye are you putting in there?
As much as possible, bro. Come on, man. Like, do I like you? I'm making it for you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm making for it for you.
Listener. Yeah. For our listener. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Man, you know, like if you're not driving, 2 ounces. 2 ounces barrel proof. Come on. Wow. We're doing this. Like, you just had a big dinner.
It's like that song, How Tall the Glass.
Yeah. Mm. Then ounce of Campari.
Okay.
Straight up Campari. Some folks like to use those alternative, the St. George Americano, the Bruto. That's kind of cool.
Sure. Not traditional, though. If someone orders a Boulevardier, reach for the Campari.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to try and wow them with, like, other ingredients. Like, I want them to be, you know, like, in a familiar place. But, yeah. But I will split vermouth. Typically just Antica or Torino. Coqui Torino and a little bit of, I don't know, like Punemes Coqui Torino would be probably what I would make for myself. Yeah.
Beautiful. Split. So to recap, we've got 2 ounces of a barrel proof rye.
Yeah.
And this is it's for hot. Those of you that aren't, hot. That aren't driving and don't really have anything going on.
Yeah.
An ounce of Campari, an ounce of sweet vermouth that is split. So a half ounce of Coqui Torino and a half ounce ish of Punemes.
Ideally, you're
taste
getting
them,
the.
Blend them.
Yeah, yeah.
That can have be fun a fun. That can be a fun activity.
Yeah. Ideally, you're getting like the best flavors out of both vermouths working together. Coqui Torino's kind of got like a little bit of a chocolatey thing going. Punemes like punches you in the balls.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just give that a good stir. Keep it on the ice. Let it just sit there. Leave it alone. Come back to it. Pour it over a rock, and you know, impress the ladies with a flamed orange peel.
Hey.
Nice.
Yeah.
Preferably with a match.
Awesome.
And you...
Because you don't want to release those butane kind of...
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Carcinogens.
The camphor.
Yeah, way to ruin, you know...
Camphoric flavors.
Cocktail with carcinogens. No one wants to smell that.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been digging the Coqui Dopo Teatro, their Vermouth Amaro.
Yeah, the Dopo. Dopo's good.
That is great Negroni Boulevardier Vermouth Amaro. Crossover.
Cool.
Yeah. It's or the Cannato. The Cannato's great. Mm. You could split the Dopo and the Cannato.
There we go.
Yeah. Now we're talking. I forgot about them. Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah. And that'll be something that we'll be covering on the Vermouth episode where we'll be, I told Jess Bacchus, we're going to pull her in for that. You can.
Abandonee.
Stole actually.
Yeah. You stole Jess away from Nashville, but that's all right. We'll welcome you back with open arms. But we encourage you to keep your vermouth in the fridge and try out different vermouths with different spirits. Try blending them together. It opens up a whole new world of possibility.
Yeah. Drink it by itself.
Yeah, drink it by itself and figure out which one you like.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to like all vermouths, but there's a vermouth for you.
And I feel like people tend to, you know, all vermouths, they're all great. There's a whole spectrum of it. And if you realize that, that's super important because people love to just grab like Carpano Antica. And it's super delicious vermouth by itself. But, you know, even the lighter bodied vermouth goes really well with certain cocktails. And, you know, in springtime or something, maybe you don't want Carpano Antica. Maybe you want something really light like Dolan or something.
I think that's a good point because in a Negroni, if the gin isn't a powerhouse, Carpano Antica is usually too strong.
Yeah.
And it'll kind of overpower.
That's true.
Same with Manhattans, too. You know, this works in the same way. It's going to overpower your whiskey.
Yeah.
And we love whiskey.
Yeah, you want to feature, I guess, good takeaway in any cocktail making is you want to feature your base spirit. That's why it's a base spirit. You want to feature it.
Yeah.
Kevin, how's the gambling problem going?
The gambling problem?
Yeah, the gambling problem.
In
when we were working together, we had a little bit of a, I don't know, like, you get sweaty and you want to make bets all the time.
This isn't an intervention, by the way. This is a podcast.
Did I?
You took me aside before service this one time, and you're like, hey, the first one to make a boulevardier with that.
Oh.
That 7-year Willet. And I was I was like, I knew you had a problem at that point, but like, I knew that to help you, I had to join you.
So this was an unfair. Okay, we did make this bet. I remember this.
Mm-hmm.
But Kenneth got to work the point, and it was literally about 5 minutes into service.
The point being the entry, the entry to the bar. And no, I was working the very back of the bar.
For you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was placed at the farthest point from the bottle that we made this bet. So I was at a major disadvantage. I just took this bet because I wanted to help you with your addiction.
But the guy that ended up ordering the boulevardier was in front of me. And so you had sneaked, he snuck in there right out the gate. I mean, it was like the first, like, I think it was the three top that sat down at the bar, and he, I don't know what I was doing. I got them
you were chit-chatting,
to chit chat, and he kind of rolled in, and then out of nowhere this guy orders a fucking boulevardier. Just hands it to him, softball.
I remember it differently.
And Kenneth just the biggest fucking shitty grin on his, like, knows that I overhear this, and like looks at me, smiles, and then, have you ever had the Willet 7-year? And then brings it down. He does this thing. If you've ever sat at Kenneth's bar, likes to bring the bottle down in front of you. He likes to pour a little sip for him, give it a little smell. Mm, yeah, this is nice. And he give you a little taste of it.
Yeah.
Good impression.
Yeah. And then he...
he's an artist.
He's an artist. So yeah, he won that bet.
What was the bet?
I don't know. I think it was just a gentleman's bet.
No, it was a financial bet.
Was it?
Yeah.
I don't remember how much.
It was buy all the drinks.
Oh, for that night?
Yeah. So I made you drive me around town. We went to like 4 bars.
Gosh. All right. Well, you earned it, so that's great.
Yeah.
Boulevard. That's amazing.
Thank you for reminding me of.
All right, I love that. We are gonna feature the Boulevardier recipe on our Instagram page. That is @liquidgold_pod. So check that out. Now, Kevin, so when you left Nashville, you went down to Charleston, and they were kind of changing McCrady's from a restaurant that it was. That was
McCrady's Tavern on Bay Street.
It was a restaurant that did a lot of kind of tasting menu stuff. It was mm-hmm. It was more of a fine dining restaurant. They were sort of turning that around and doing some kind of cuisine from the Gilded Age. Yep. They called it kind of turn of the century, late 1800s, and then some French influence. And they were turning it into kind of what it was originally, which it's been a tavern there for 300 years. George Washington was hanging out there.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy story. But so you go back there, you sort of get out of that style that you were in here and what you were doing, and then you're sort of in charge of this whole program. What was that like to kind of go to this sort of unfamiliar city to you and sort of start over again and help to kind of relaunch this whole thing?
Yeah.
That had to be intense.
It was very intense, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we opened the tavern first, and that's actually kind of where the bar is. And then McCready's restaurant is kind of adjacent to it. So there's no bar in there, actually, but we still do the same kind of beverage program for that. So cocktails are still coming out of the same bar and things like that. It was a lot of fun. It was kind of, I mean, that was my first experience as kind of being a bar manager and taking on not only just being creative with drinks, but also kind of like heading up the bar and making sure, you know, your employees and stuff are taken care of and all that things. And so that was, I mean, that was, I probably learned more about that than anything else. Just kind of managing people and dealing with people and things like that. But it was a super amazing experience. And both of those restaurants are a great experience. The tasting room, McCready's restaurant, is absolutely fantastic. If you ever get a chance, if you're in Charleston, definitely pop in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that side now is just tasting menu, super intense.
Yep.
Maybe 20 seats or something.
Yeah.
And it's a very immersive dining experience.
Yeah, they're cooking in front of you, playing in front of you. And it's a bar, which is really cool. It's like a little horseshoe bar, so you get to sit, you know, it's very, it's meant to be communal. You know, so
it's a super beautiful space. Yeah. Like the it's way gorgeous. That the way that the tabletop molds into the floor.
Yeah.
That was so it's freaking amazing. Cool. What a great idea. Right, like how could I never seen that before.
Yeah.
Yeah, what were some cool beverages that you were doing? So the tavern was a little more high volume, but then you got to assist with some of the cool beverages at the tasting menu.
We did the same cocktails for both concepts to streamline everything. So I was using kind of Madeira is a huge thing, and one of the cocktails that I put on there that I think is still on the menu actually. And it's named after a certain Kenneth Dedmond, actually. And
thanks, buddy.
An ode to him. But it was a rye cocktail with Madeira, and Madeira having a huge influence kind of in Charleston and in that area. It was kind of makes a lot of sense because most likely George Washington was probably drinking Madeira by the pint.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So we did non-alcoholic pairings, and that was kind of a very cool, interesting experience. Working with Sean and working with John Sleesman, who's the chef there. Both of those guys are super, super creative and trying to find it's kind of difficult to make a non-alcoholic beverage because you're still trying to find those same senses and fulfill those. So you're just trying to find texture still and aromatics and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking to things, you know, we would use different kind of liquids and cooking liquids and lots of vinegars. And one of the things that we kind of landed with, which is kind of like Japanese style, was kind of blooming the ingredients with soda water.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge thing because it would add texture and add effervescence, but it would kind of elevate all the textures and you would actually be able to kind of taste everything throughout. But they would serve to Nick and Nora, so they're like maybe 2-2.5 ounces of something kind of to enjoy with different kind of ingredients. But it was really fun because I would take different ingredients from what the dishes that they were using and kind of incorporate that into like a non-alcoholic drink and things like that. But
mm-hmm.
lots of different, I mean, the pantry there and everything, and they've had a great list of different ingredients that they were using. And so that was really helpful, obviously, kind of just chatting with them and being like, what do we want to do here? What do we want to taste it?
It's a powerhouse of brain power going on. But so then you kind of helped to launch that. You're there for a little while and then you kind of get back in Husk mode. You go to Greenville to open that. And then eventually you land where you are now as the bar manager at Savannah. What was the process like to go kind of back into that world, but then to come into a different city? You went from Charleston now to Greenville. Mm-hmm. Those are two pretty different cities and different cuisines, different vegetables, different seasons a little bit.
Yeah.
What was that process like to kind of jump back into that world, but also go into a totally different city?
Yeah. It was great, and we had a really great support team there, which is really nice. And I kind of came in as a consulting bar manager. We had hired a bar manager already for Greenville.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to kind of come in and basically assist him and help him do kind of a lot of the back-end stuff, picking out spirits and liquor lists and stuff. And then we kind of got to collaborate on the cocktail menu itself. And that was really important to me is, like, you know, he's going to be there. And so we mm-hmm. want to work together and kind of make it something. It's a cohesive menu. It's still kind of Husk driven, you know, using Southern ingredients and things like that, and locality and seasonality and things like that. So that was really a really fun experience because I got to kind of step back and really help out, do some training, things like that, but just be more of a support person.
Mm-hmm.
And I really loved having that. Because it's kind of more of like a hands-off thing. It was like I knew I was leaving, so I could be kind of creative and be really supportive to those people. But we got to go around and kind of visit some different farms and people that were producing interesting things. It's definitely interesting, and you guys know this, like we were kind of going into that fall-winter season. So it's, which is always interesting because you have to kind of get more creative.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because we didn't have, I mean, they had a bunch of pickles already kind of going and things like that, but, you know.
Didn't have much time to, like, start growing the pantry.
Right.
It was.
Yeah. So we had to be kind of creative. So, like, one of the things we used was pine rosin, which was really cool. And we did an infused gin with pine rosin. We did an infused turmeric cocktail, things like that. So using having those around, lots of like root vegetables, obviously. One of my favorites was we did the Copper and Kings immature brandy infused with beets. And that was fantastic because obviously like it was clear spirit went from clear to like bright purple.
Yeah.
And it just made the cocktail so beautiful and very interesting. And I love that spirit anyways. So.
What did you think of Greenville as a city itself? Like, did you make friends?
I worked a lot. Me and Mr. Kenny.
So no?
Kenny Lyons and Sam Jett lived in a house.
Okay. And there's two friends.
So, yeah. So I had those two friends. Our favorite restaurant to go to was Chewy's.
Oh, nice.
Queso dip, bro.
Kaboom. The Chewy's brew is probably my favorite with the sidecar. So you get the frozen drink. Yep. You get the Coronita in yep. the top of it.
Yep.
And then you also, I think you can get like a sidecar if you want. So,
all right. So let's dive off here into a little parapalooza. So queso. What are you going to pair with queso?
Chewy's queso. What are you going to pair with it?
Yeah, what are we pairing? We did Taco Bell last time.
Chewy's queso.
Chewy's queso, which...
And it doesn't have to be like on the Chewy's menu. We'll start you off
yeah,
easy.
Yeah, but like a white... You know, it's like white girl queso. What... Yeah.
I mean, if I'm eating queso, I'm probably going to be at some sort of Tex-Mex Mexican restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, I usually get a margarita.
Yeah,
and I usually have a beer on the side. So, and because I kind of like to do that thing,
yeah,
where I have a margarita, and normally I don't know. Sometimes they come off a little sweet, so I like to add probably like a Tecate or something. Mm-hmm. You know, squeeze a little lime, a little salt in there, and that's I just kind of back and forth that.
Yeah, margarita, you like play Tecate. Them off each other. Yeah. It's like offset.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So
that's,
I like that.
That's a valid, that's valid, easy opener because Kevin also used to moonlight for the Bakersfield Group.
Yeah.
So for a living, he sold queso dip and
Tecate and margaritas. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And people will be like, I'll take a margarita. And he's like, would you like a beer with that?
Yeah.
I'll take a beer. Would you like a margarita with that?
Okay.
Sorry.
So, Kevin, since we know that you like to wake up and drink, what are you going to drink with some pancakes?
Pancakes. I mean, you know, I don't really like pancakes that much.
Mm.
I'm more of a waffle person.
So if you're at brunch,
okay,
yeah, what are you
we're
gonna drink
manipulate
with
the batter into like a more uniform, like
no, we're just
symmetrical.
Honestly, with pancakes or waffles, it's gotta be super strong coffee.
Mm.
And I love putting maple syrup in my coffee or some sort of thing like that.
Okay, Kevin, now put booze in it.
No. Okay, and if I was going to put alcohol in, I'd probably just put some whiskey in it.
Yeah. Nice.
Doesn't matter the whiskey. I'd probably put anything in there, whether it was Irish whiskey or a little bit of blended scotch or bourbon or rye.
There we go.
Whatever. I'd just put a little bit of whiskey in there. Also, actually, Angostura Amaro is really good in coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. So I can see that. Yeah.
It's got all that spice.
Spicy note, yeah. That's
yeah,
really
that would
good.
Be beautiful. Yeah. A little waffles, a little butter and maple syrup, yeah. and some coffee with Angostura
Amaro.
Yeah.
You want it to go.
That sounds like
yeah.
a brunch.
Okay.
Yeah, a little on the gentler side. You know.
So when you're going to Greenville to open the Husk there, and then you went off into the Husk in Savannah.
Yeah.
What kind of ingredients have you found along the way, especially in Savannah?
Mm-hmm.
That you didn't expect to find that you've been working with, something that's inspired you.
Inspiring ingredients. Definitely, we are getting this really amazing, one of our purveyors, she owns an aquaponic farm with her husband, and we get a really, really amazing herbs from them.
Mm.
So when we opened, one of my favorite things where they were making this amazing chocolate mint, which you know is...
Yeah.
You
find, amazing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was probably one of my favorite cocktails too, because it was kind of like a tiki inspired drink. It had plantation pineapple, green chartreuse, bronca menta, creme de cacao, and lime.
Ooh.
And it was
great.
Just kind of like everything like winter tiki, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that chocolate mint just really, really made it like what it wanted to be.
I see that tying everything together.
So it was so amazing. And then we also were doing the frozen grasshopper. So it was perfect to have some chocolate mint. in that kind of aspect.
That's great.
Other ingredients, this the purple clover, I think we talked about a little bit earlier, like that's one of my favorite kind of, it's so beautiful. It's, you know, it's got three leaves on it. If you pull one of them off, it kind of looks like a little butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
They're great to infuse things, and they're very, very bright and acidic. So I love using that.
And they probably just don't go dormant as much down there as they would here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely
pretty, it's a better climate.
It's definitely pretty warm down there for the most part.
So yeah.
A lot of the stuff that people are growing is like glass, you know. It's not going to, you know, we're not really worried about frost most of the time. So that's kind of helpful.
That's cool.
I was able to get that. But
you getting out there to the beach?
Yeah. Tybee Island.
Tybee. No dogs out on Tybee, bro. You need to go to Hilton Head. You need to get a dog, dude.
I got a kitten.
Oh, nice. What's your cat's name?
Kenneth.
Really?
No.
it's Kevin. Your name is cat Kevin.
it's a she. Her name's Lolita.
Lolita. Yeah. Mm. Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's some...
A little racy there, huh?
I'm looking at Kenneth's face and he's questioning.
Kenneth is
I'm just disappointed that your cat's name not named after me, bro.
Well, there is something named after you. And it is our next feature here on Liquid Gold.
Hey.
What we got today for booze news?
I got some bad news, and we will be getting back to this story in our mid-March episode coming up, unfortunately. And this was to be expected. A lot of Japanese whiskey brands are holding back and pulling a lot of shit off the shelves or just not bottling anymore. So prepare yourself for a Japanese whiskey shortage. Mm. The market blew up too fast for production. Mm. It's going to take another 10 years for them to catch up. So Suntory and Nika are pulling a lot of their brands out of our market. That would be Nika 12, which is one of my favorites. Nika Coffee, which is, you know, like one of the more reasonably priced Japanese whiskeys.
Yeah.
On a more scary note, there are way less regulations for what's called Japanese whiskey than say what we're used to in the bourbon world. So buyer beware. Once again, be sure you're checking your product, because they can be bottling and labeling Japanese whiskey that is made in Taiwan, made in China, made in Vietnam. Buyer beware, or just wait it out and try some American single malts. There are plenty of them out there.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. So we are going to be getting into some Japanese whiskey talk with Sally from LA Jackson. She'll be our next guest here coming up in a few weeks. We're going to talk all things rooftop bars and Ramos Gin Fizz and whiskey, Japanese whiskey with Sally. So that's going to be super exciting. We look forward to that. What else you got for booze news today?
Well, I swear I've got some good news coming, but right now, Mike...
Yeah, give me some good news.
No. No, I'm not.
Oh, man.
Mike, are you familiar with the chemical glyphosate?
I have noticed that it's in the news lately.
Yes.
And I'm worried about it. I'm concerned.
This is a herbicide formerly owned by Monsanto, which was actually sold to... the German brand, Bayer, popular for my go-to headache medicine, aspirin, in a recent study of 20 brands of beer and wine, 19 found considerable, not like incredible, but considerable amounts of glyphosate.
That is nuts.
Yeah.
This is an insane story. This was national news.
These are very large brands.
Top headline. This is Wall Street Journal. This is all over.
This is everywhere. And I'm actually staring down at my phone at like 8 different sources. So don't go like DMing us and arguing about this, because this is something that terrifies me. Terrifies me, because I myself steer way clear of herbicides and kind of go by that old school philosophy that if there is a bug eating my plant, then perhaps I haven't raised that plant right.
Or it's just supposed to be there in the first place. And
exactly. Mother Nature should not be messed with too much. Just being here, Mike.
Yeah, because what happens? You fuck with the bees. And then you fuck with the bees and you're going to fuck with everything. So maybe just don't get involved. Don't try to play God and try to fucking kill plants and,
That's true, man. These are like very large brands. Coors, Miller. Coors, my go-to, bro. Gonna have to change. I don't know if I can even.
The CL Smooth, the camping beer.
Dang,
that's my
man.
Camping beer. Yeah, can of Coors Light.
It's my everything, bro. Yeah. Coors Original. Like, it's my everything. Put them in my back pocket. Walk around the house.
Yeah.
It's my cleaning beer. It's my porch beer. it's my after work beer. It's everything.
Yeah.
But even very popular, very affordable, very accessible wine brands are included in the study. The only one that is was marked as not having any traces of glyphosate. Peak Brewing in Maine, the great state of Maine, which we cannot access anywhere but in Maine.
Yeah, they're going to need to get wider distribution.
Oh man, they
being
probably
the
just
one
got,
out of the 20 that didn't have it.
Yeah, they just got approved
important.
For a loan, man. Super approved.
Wow.
Moving on.
Yeah, can I have some good news to booze to?
Let me ask you another question, Mike. How do you typically make vodka? How would one go about making vodka?
Distilling it 8 million times.
Good one.
Until it's as pure as sunshine.
In our neighbor to the north, Canada, there is actually a very specific law from the 1950s that requires anything labeled vodka to be distilled from grains or potatoes, which sounds like pretty normal, but
yep.
Actually a lot of vodkas are just made from anything that has enough sugar to distill. So dairy farmers, this is where it gets really good. And, mm. and we're getting into the good news. There's a light, Mike.
Whew, man. Raking us over the coals today.
dairy farmers in Canada are trying to get a law passed, which is not going to halt production of a neutral grain or a neutral spirit that they are making from a milk byproduct. Typically, what you do in a dairy farming is you get your huge batch, you filter it, pasteurize it, and then you have a lot of lactose high fat and protein byproduct. This stuff is typically like meant to be dealt with and very expensive to deal with because it can poison our streams and kill a lot of wildlife. It's crazy, but when it's distilled, it becomes a incredibly sustainable, environmentally friendly liquor distillate. So
the dairy itself?
Yes. It's what's called permeat, which is a dairy byproduct.
Right.
Before it, when they filter it and pasteurize it, you get this end product that goes into the jug and goes to your grocery store. And there's a lot of particulate left over that is high in protein, high in fat. High in sugar. A lot of dairy farmers just dump it on land, and it's a really messy cleanup.
That's what this century should be and could be and will be about, is us figuring out a way to make things a little bit better on future generations and to use these things that are byproducts and to make the world better.
True that. So Omid McDonald, founder of the dairy distillery, which is the name, Dairy Distillery in Almont, Ontario, will be producing what they're calling vodcow.
Wow. That's problematic, but
while they wait on Canada on the Canadian government to approve it as a vodka. If they produce this in the United States, it would be called vodka. If they produced it in Europe, it would be called vodka. What's interesting also is they like typical yeast strains that we would normally use wouldn't cut it. So they actually had to find a proprietary yeast strain that would be able to convert this lactose rich product into a higher alcohol, a high enough alcohol beer to be able to distill, to make it worthwhile.
Hmm. Wow.
it's fascinating, and the, you know, like, kind of gets weird. They're all like, later in the story, they're talking about doing blind taste tests with bartenders, and guess what the primary description of this product was.
What's that?
Smooth.
People understand smooth, I will say. People understand smooth. I think it's a good, I think it's an okay word to use to, you know, the average customer coming to a bar if they're like, "What? Which whiskey's good? This one's good. It's smooth." People are like, "Oh, it's smooth?
I'd rather say
that's better than rough."
What if you said it's cool? Ooh, it's cool.
I think that would turn a lot of people off.
Because I'd rather replace cool in describing anything else with smooth. Mm. Say, you know, like, look at that Dodge Charger. It's smooth.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that'll do it for Booze News.
That was an enlightening and future-gazing episode.
Yeah. I was happy to turn it around. I'm always focusing on the darkness, Mike, and that's where my humor comes from. But
we'll bring it back to
I'm
the
really
light.
I'm really excited for this dairy product.
That's cool. That is definitely something for the future to keep an eye on right here on Liquid Gold. So thank you to Kenneth Edman, always bringing in the fresh booze news. Well, looking ahead here, as we get into March and springtime, we are going to be looking forward to having Sally on the show from LA Jackson. From there, we will start to get into some Tiki forward programming that we're both excited about. There's some really amazing people around town that we're going to talk to, getting ready for Chopper to open.
I can't
that's
wait
exciting.
For Liquid Gold in the spring. We made it out of the winter.
We're getting there. The sun's out now.
Yeah, I wore a hoodie and
the
I shouldn't have to.
Flowers are unfurling.
The buttercups are reaching.
The buttercups are open. They have opened. So find us again at liquidgold_pod on Instagram. Send us a message. Invite us to collaborate. We invite you to collaborate with us. And if you have any questions about cocktails, anything at all, Parapalooza, what should I pair with my cheeseburger? Well, let's talk about it. So hit us up at liquidgold_pod on Instagram. And we've got some other exciting content that we're excited to announce a little bit down the road that we'll be featuring, as well as a feature that we'll be doing called Shots. Liquid Gold Shots, where we'll be calling the shots. We'll be talking just quick little episodes where we get into one little topic. And the first one that we'll be doing, we'll be going over the car bomb, getting ready for St. Patty's Day, which is coming up, which is always just basically a drinking holiday. There's not much to it. You don't have to go out and like buy a gift for someone. It's just basically I think I'm going to have some Guinness, which that's my kind of holiday. For my co-host, Kenneth Dedman. Thanks, brother. My name's Mike Wolf, and we will see you next time on Liquid Gold.
Love you, Mike.
Love you, buddy.